It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
I hate him. He's cuckoo for copocuffs.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on the Twitter, at Matthew Soce. We do have a blog, which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com with our Film Sociology
staff picks.
Staff picks are underway.
Here we have those. And, of course, the show is available as a podcast, also available on iTunes. Voice you just heard, Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
Never played Donkey Kong?
Probably
the original before your time, before it branched off into Mario and all the other...
On Super Nintendo.
Super Nintendo. Oh,
so
boy.
Would that be the original or no?
No. Yeah. I'm going to going to 7-Eleven and playing Donkey Kong.
Yeah,
that's
no,
the original.
I never went to a 7-Eleven to play Donkey Kong.
They don't have 7-Elevens here. I'm sorry, Village Pantry?
Yes, Village Pantry.
Yeah,
no.
Village. Nope. What did you play? Did they still have video games in those when you were a kid?
At the Village Pantry, I don't think so.
Okay.
But I had a... original Nintendo and original Nintendo, and I had, of course, the Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt combo, and then also had Excitebike, which was awesome.
Right.
And, of course, the greatest game of Nintendo.
Joust.
Jordan versus Bird. Nobody was ever Bird. Everybody
wanted to be Michael.
Yep.
Not even here in Indiana?
I was never Bird.
No.
I don't think Bird dunked in the game. You could dunk with Jordan.
No, because he had a horrendous back by the time he was playing Jordan. Okay, people are asking, what in the hell are they talking about? This is what happened. We're not going to play it on the show, although it would chew up some time, but we won't. If you go to YouTube and just do Al Pacino video games, guess what? It involves Frank Caliendo, and we'll just kind of leave it at that. The convenience store that I could walk to, they had Q-Bert. I enjoyed playing Q-Bert.
Never played Q-Bert.
I know you didn't.
No.
Because I had a convenience store near my house in the early 80s, and guess what? Early 80s?
Different time. It was a different time than the later 80s.
completely different era.
Yeah, totally different. I had an original Nintendo, and at the daycare that I went to for a short time, they had a Super Nintendo, and that was when the Super Nintendo had just come out, and that was like the coolest thing. Like if you picked up your area or whatever, you get first choice of what you wanted to do at like free time, and you could play Super Nintendo, and they had Donkey Kong, so I got to play Donkey Kong.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, my parents. Well, let's put it this way: we bought an Odyssey instead of an Atari back in the. Early 80s, and we bought a Betamax instead of a VHS. And I would say in both cases, who knew? It just happened that way. Okay, why are we... All right, let's... now that we've done early 80s and early 90s gaming information for you, we thought we'd have company. They might show. We'll see. But
it'll be a surprise.
It will be a surprise. So that means 33% of the workload is now thrown back upon us. That's okay. We are in that area of time where the Oscar nominations came out, and of course the Academy Awards will be next month. And so
February 24th, I believe.
I believe they are. So, while you're at it, why don't you look up?
I do have the internet here.
You do have the internet. Let's not forget IU Cinema and the IMA.
Yes.
So, well, you're getting to that. So this is the period where people, a lot of people are catching up on films that are nominated for Academy Awards, which we I thought we were going to talk to with our guests, but we'll see. But then the studios, they still have to put product out there. They still have thousands of multiplexes that they need to fill worldwide. So. So they're going to continue with that. Now none of these are probably going to be in the front runner for next year's Academy Awards for anything, but and that's okay. Opening in theaters nationwide, all three of these. We have Movie 43, which if you've seen it, it involves one of the Farrelly brothers, and it is apparently a combination of Kentucky Fried Movie. Or Amazon Women on the Moon, depending on your age bracket, and New Year's Eve, or Valentine's Day, because it is a series of comedic skits, short comedic films, with an amazing cast. And apparently this film took 4 years to make, just to get everybody's schedules.
So it's the new Metallica album?
It is the new Metallica album. And they brought in a life coach who started writing songs, and that's not good.
Wanted to have more creative input.
That's right. And you know, Bob Rock was pushed aside, and then Lars Ulrich's dad is berating his millionaire son. Good family affair. But Johnny Knoxville, Gerard Butler, Anna Faris, Sean William Scott, Hugh Jackman, Richard Gere, Uma Thurman, Halle Berry, Emma Stone, Naomi Watts, Kate Bosworth, Kate Winslet, Terrence Howard, Liev Schreiber, Elizabeth Banks, Kristen Bell, Josh Duhamel, Jason Sudeikis, Christopher McLovin, and Chris Pratt are all in this film. But they have little short comedies.
What is this called?
It's called Movie 43.
Oh, yes.
Not screened for the press. That's okay. Also opening is, well, the title says, kind of sums it up, Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters.
Yeah.
It's like the cheesecake off of their cove. Yes. Apparently, for those who like the dark, kind of grown-up versions of Snow White and the Huntsman.
I was just going to say.
Little Red Riding Hood, that was that hardly anybody saw. Or even Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Yeah, this is Gemma Arterton and Jeremy Renner. Two-time Academy Award nominee Jeremy Renner. And what could be one of my favorite witches, Famke Janssen. She's not taken in this one. So, but also opening is Parker, the latest film from Jason Statham, who it feels like he does like four or five films a year. Busy working man. And I think we have some audio.
We do have some audio.
Are you ready to play the audio?
Yeah, you know it.
Wow, for a change. All right, let's hear it.
Civilized people need to follow rules. These are mine.
Freeze! Everybody down!
I don't steal from people who can't afford it. I don't hurt people that don't deserve it. So relax.
I gotta say, Parker, you came as advertised, but I'm gonna need the whole score for this next thing.
We made a deal.
If you were me, what would you do with a guy like you?
I'd kill him while I had the chance. Most importantly, if you say you'll do something and you don't,
do it!
I'll make sure you regret it.
Don't start anything. He's got connections.
Give me a name.
Someone on the inside.
It's Rogers. Daniel Parmit, San Antonio, Texas.
Is Daniel Parmit your real name?
Why wouldn't it be?
Because you're less than 2 months old. I don't know what you're into, but whatever it is, you're gonna need somebody who knows the territory.
Take off your clothes.
What?
I have to know if you're wearing a wire. Don't ask me any questions because I'm only gonna tell you what I wanna tell you. People took something from me. I'm just gonna put things right.
Who the hell are you?
Parker.
He's alive.
Parker's dead. You shot him. Right?
They're here for a robbery, and they're going to use that house to lay low when they're done.
It's a score of a lifetime.
So let them steal something. You steal it from them, and I get a cut.
Stay away.
I say I'll do something, I always follow through. Always.
How do you sleep at night?
I don't drink coffee after 7.
That was a her.
Yep.
With the last punchline. You have to have a joke at the end of the action film trailer.
I feel like
you're tired already.
I feel like we've seen this thing so many times.
But not by Jason Statham.
Does it matter?
Oh, it doesn't matter. I don't know. You didn't break it down.
Does it?
Well, I will say this, as I alluded to before the trailer, it feels like Statham's constantly working. I mean, the guy's in 3, 4, 5 films a year, and I pulled up his list. What I've noticed is, and I like the guy. I mean, I have not heard stories of him being a raging D-bag off the set, and you know, he seems to put in his time and his work. And but what's interesting is this is one of those guys. If you have an actual director directing him, then it'll work out. And I give an example of a film he did called The Bank Job. Back in 2008, it was directed by Roger Donaldson, who gave us films like No Way Out. And if you have a film where he's doing more than just kicking somebody in the face, I'm with you on that one. And joining us here at Film Sociology, and I can say it here, it's my show, the Aaron Andrews of Film Sociology Productions. That's Tracy Mitchell.
Well, good evening, Mr. Soci.
Everything okay?
We're moving along. We're bumping along here.
Is your mission accomplished?
Not mission accomplished yet. We're working on our lovely letter to our donors for the year, thanking everybody for their contributions, helping out with their tax-deductible information.
Mm-hmm.
We're having a good time.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you took a break to come hang out on the show.
Crunch numbers. Let's talk film.
Those listening right now might recognize Tracy Mitchell from the Film Sociology News Department.
That's right, the Aaron Andrews of the Film Sociology.
I do my best.
News Department. Okay, so as I was saying earlier, so if you have him doing more than just kicking people in the face, and you have a plot that is more than just straight ahead revenge, then I think you got something. And with this, it's the source of the screenplay is from a novel from Richard Stark. Richard Stark is a gentleman that wrote Payback, which was done better over 30 years prior to that, called Point Blank with Lee Marvin. And there is a little honor among thieves, and of course, as Statham character says, he just wants what's coming to him for his cut. You also have some of the voices, if you don't recognize, the bad guys that he's double-crossed, that includes Wendell Pierce, Michael Chiklis, Clifton Collins Jr., and Bobby Cannavale. So nice to see Chiklis taking a break from TV for a little bit. Jennifer Lopez shows up and does something.
Y'all love it. So
y'all does something slightly more than just be the girl. Tracy is shaking her head. You're not putting J-Lo in Renee Zellweger category, are you?
No, she hasn't quite reached that caliber of annoyance for me yet.
Are you saying she's on her way?
But I feel like she's moving down that path.
Why?
I don't know. There's just something about her. It's just not right.
I think that's the same thing that makes it. I think the same thing that you're talking about makes it completely right. But anyway,
neither here nor there.
Okay. are you done playing sound bites over there?
Everybody was laughing, so
I see.
Tommy,
he's just
laughed too.
That is it. So there is a Nick Nolte shows up briefly in the film as well. But there are times it feels like it's Elmore Leonard light, probably, or Carl Hiaasen light, because it's set in South Florida. There is a. It does get dumbed down a little bit in the end, but the fact that the revenge plot is not just him stomping with a dead-eye stare. It's something slightly more than that. And the more interesting aspect about this for me is that the film is directed by Taylor Hackford. These are the films Taylor Hackford has done. The Idolmaker, An Officer and a Gentleman, Against All Odds, White Knights, Chuck Berry, Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, Everybody's All-American, Blood In, Blood Out, the 3-hour Crips Blood saga, Dolores Claiborne, The Devil's Advocate, Proof of Life, and Ray. And the other thing he's best known for, he is Mr. Helen Mirren. They met on White Nights. So,
love that.
So you have a real director, not somebody who did videos, not somebody who did commercials, not somebody, you know, so he's, I'm pulling up my black socks and saying, this is a guy that knows his way around a camera as opposed to doing some you darn kids and your Michael Bay flash editing and you can't see anything and you're, you need Dramamine to watch it because I'm getting nauseous. Not, none of that is here. So I think it's a throwback to some of the crime revenge films from when I was a kid, which meant, of course, that was a different time.
Yes.
Right, Cobb?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not slow, so shut up.
It's not terrible.
It's not, no, it's not terrible. It's slightly better than that. Okay. It is. Oh, God.
Oh, come on, Kobe.
How neat is that? That's pretty neat.
It is pretty neat compared to the rest. Well, I mean, let's think about what he's known for. All right, Jason Statham. Tracy, your thoughts on Mr. Statham.
He's got a lovely lady on his arm. Let's talk about that.
In,
you know,
this
I'm from
movie,
the news department.
In,
I also like to have
in
little
general.
In general, in his life.
Who's the lady in his life?
Oh, what's her name?
We don't know. That's what you're supposed to do.
I know. I'm terrible. I did not do my research. She's
come on, Kat Sadler.
Oh, good Lord. She's in Transformers with Shia LaBeouf.
Megan Fox?
No.
The one that replaced Megan Fox.
We go for the beauty.
Transformers 3.
Yes. She's a beautiful blonde.
Really?
Rosie Huntington-Whiteley.
Thank you.
Great. But what does it have to do with him?
It doesn't. I'm just saying he scores some pretty, you know,
oh,
hot
I see.
Ladies.
I see. So, but what do you, but what do you think of his films, Miss News Director?
Well, you know, I
does your husband watch those?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
He's a guy. He's got things to do.
He's got things to do. You know, I'm all for a movie where someone can, you know, there's some fists being thrown, some things being blown up. You know, he tends to fall into that category. He's my new Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis.
He's my new balding Bruce Willis.
Less smarmy than Bruce, I think.
A little bit, but I kind of love the smarmy.
No, he's not smarmy, is he? No.
I feel like he is.
A titch.
Where's he from?
He's from England. He's from Derbyshire.
He's
Derbyshire.
Oh, of course.
Of course.
You know, I only know that because I printed out the IMDb page. Shut up.
It's like, I don't know. Is he English Bruce Willis?
No, because
yes,
Jason Statham never worked with Quentin Tarantino or Terry Gilliam.
Did I
just poke holes in your theory? Oh, I believe I did. Okay. But early on he was known for some of the ridiculous over the top films like Cellular and the Transporter series and Crank. Crank is just bat spit crazy. And, you know, of course, he won the Expendables. But this is slightly better than that. I think it's less knuckle-dragging than Crank or Death Race. In fact, it's considerably less knuckle-draggy than those films.
It's a nice way to spend 2 hours in a movie theater that you won't wish you got back.
Yes. Yes, it is. So there. Have spoken. So there. That is out there. So if you're...
Thank you, Mike Perry.
Thank you, Mike Perry. So, all right. So, Tracy, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Great. It's great to be with you on a Friday night.
Good to have you here on a Friday night. Yes, Kobe.
Hold that thought.
I'm holding your thought.
Tonight, this weekend at IU Cinema.
Our IU correspondent, that is Kobe Slagle.
Yes, tonight, 50th anniversary Ann Arbor Film Festival, 6:30, and then the documentary Chasing Ice at 9:30. Tomorrow, Les Million, 3 o'clock.
Not Les Mis.
No, Les Million.
Les Million.
Comedy, foreign language, musical.
That's The Million.
Yes, okay. The Million. And then Chasing Ice again. And then Sunday, They Live by Night, the 1948 drama, and Far From Heaven, 2002.
Oh, the Julianne Moore melodrama with Dennis Quaid and Dennis Haysbert. Good film.
Indeed.
Good film.
That's IU Cinema. And tonight at the IMA.
It's part of their Visual Wonder series.
The Winter Nights.
Winter Nights, yes.
Days of Heaven.
Oh, the Richard Gere film with Brooke Adams, Sam Shepard, and is directed by Terrence Malick. Malick, who gave us Badlands, The Thin Red Line, The New World, Tree of Life. Gorgeous film. Gorgeous film. It is slow-paced, but it's not slow, sir. So, you smirk curls up on your face. But it's a gorgeous film about...
It's a pot boiler.
It is not a pot boiler. You know what? Parker is a pot boiler.
Parker is not a pot boiler.
What?
Okay. I do not believe...
All right, what do you think a pot boiler is?
You described something as a, something that is a potboiler is slowly developing. Something that takes its time to develop.
What, do you want to look it up? Do you want to see what Wikipedia, the be-all, end-all knowing on the intraweb says about potboiler?
Potboiler.
What, Tracy, what do you think the definition of potboiler is? And remember, Kevin Murphy alluded to it in my archive interview last week. He was talking about the formula, which is, I think, a slow simmering comes to a heightened end, with like an action movie. Am I right? Oh, you're not responding right away.
Potboiler.
No, I mean, yes.
I'm reading this.
You have to read it out loud. This is radio.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to. Okay, a potboiler is a low quality novel, play, opera, film, or other creative work whose main purpose was to pay for the creator's daily expenses. Thus, the imagery of boil the pot, which means to provide one's livelihood. Authors who create potboiler novels or screenplays are sometimes called hack writers or hacks. Novels deemed to be potboilers may also be called pulp fiction, and potboiler films may be called popcorn movies.
This is a good popcorn movie. Yeah, it's slightly above. Again, this is
a great way to spend your time.
Then
come
that
on.
means Jason Statham's entire career is made of potboilers. This one is one of the better ones of the lot. Mm. There. You have nothing to say.
I thought potboiler was something.
I'm Matt Soucy, and I'm a big jerk, right?
Yep.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and he can call me a jerk, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray, and we will chat with Tracy Mitchell more. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org.
Anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know what I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Blockbuster Video. Wow, what a difference.
Full disclosure, Tracy Mitchell, also a part of the We Need More Wesley Willis on Public Radio camp.
Oh, I've been behind that since day one. Day one.
We gotta watch the documentaries. There's two of them about.
There's a YouTube documentary on him that made me cry. I mean, literally, tears could not. He's a beautiful man with a beautiful story
and serious issues
and an incredible artist.
Yes, Alternative Tentacles' favorite artist, I think.
An incredible mind who was able to, as he sat in the streets of Chicago documenting and drawing what he saw, the architecture, he could remember the license plate numbers of the buses as they drove by.
And you said a beautiful mind, which he would occasionally drive into your beautiful mind as a nice greeting. Hi, welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, @MatthewSoci. Hanging out with Tracy Mitchell and Kobe Slagle. And, of course, I love the fact that Film Sociology is your home for all information on Tommy Wiseau and Wesley Willis. That's the kind of heart. You know what it is? It's Pot Boiler Radio right there. Now, we were talking off air, Tracy referred to Jason Statham as the new Bruce Willis.
My younger Bruce Willis.
Your younger, less smarmy Bruce Willis.
Exactly.
By the way, I saw the trailer for A Good Day to Die Hard, which is opening.
Oh, it's Valentine's Day, baby.
Valentine's Day.
You know where I'll be.
At work. And then going to see it.
And then going to see it.
You're not
going to
be that group of ladies that, you know, takes a day off from work and plans their entire day around Magic Mike.
Oh, no, but that is the greatest comedy of the year. I mean, come on.
Whether it knows it or not.
Whether it knows it or not, it's the greatest comedy.
So you brought up Bruce Willis.
Love him.
And the fact that you watch Die Hard.
Every Christmas. It's my Christmas film.
And apparently, I love when this happens because I if anything, I'm subtle and humble. But, and a braggart. But you apparently did not know I was an extra in Die Hard 2.
I was completely unaware.
Yes.
Could not believe that I was sitting here with a living legend.
Where? Who? Him? He's too young to be a legend. Unless you're a street ball player.
I'm 25, so I can technically be referred to as a classic.
And you can run a car.
Yep.
Anyway.
I got you this time.
You got me this time. This time. And Red Clay is still a great album, so shut up. They filmed the ending of Die Hard 2 in Alpena, Michigan. They needed, because apparently it got too warm in Denver when they were where they were originally filming, and they needed to find a runway big enough for a DC-9 and no nighttime traffic. And there's an Air Force base up in Alpena, Michigan, which is probably, for those who are putting out the palm of their hand like the state of Michigan, second digit on your index finger there, first knuckle, I guess. It was about a three-hour drive from my beloved hometown of Flint. So my best friend from high school and I went up, and we were the first two people in line to be extras, and we got to be extras. And we froze ourselves. It was, of course, shot in the middle of the night. What was shot in Alpena, for those who remember Die Hard 2, and if you haven't seen it, screw you, spoiler alert on a 22-year-old film. It's when the plane safely lands, and everybody's getting out of the plane, and Bruce is reuniting with Bonnie Bedelia. So that whole last kind of 5 minutes of the picture was shot in Michigan.
Were you on the plane?
I was on the plane. I got to say hi to Bonnie Bedelia and William Atherton, everyone's favorite jerk guy from the 80s who played the TV reporter. My best friend Jason Beckman bumped into Bruce on a take and didn't know it. Just kind of, he was backing up and bumped into his, hey, he turned around, it was Bruce Willis. And I got a direct order from director Rennie Harlan. I'm in two shots. The power of pause is I'm supposed to run across the shot and go to somebody that's laid out on a stretcher. And, of course, I remember what exactly I was wearing, although I had four layers of clothes under my clothes. So I probably was about as big as I am now. And there's the shot where Dennis Franz tears up Bruce Willis's parking ticket from the beginning of the film. I'm behind Bruce Willis in that shot.
I look forward to going home and pulling out my trilogy.
You have the trilogy?
Oh, you bet I do.
Oh, you haven't revamped it with Live Free or Die Hard?
You know, we try not to talk about that.
Oh, okay.
But I'll be checking this out later on this evening. The Mitchell household.
Black suspenders, gray shirt, dark gray pants. Now, the other thing is, when you go down, and I did get to go down the emergency chute, but you cannot wear your coat and you cannot wear shoes. Standard procedure.
Because the shoes.
Apparently, we should have been paying more attention when we sat in that emergency exit row, folks.
Yeah. So yeah, we so we were there for two nights. Basically, after the first night, Jason and I went to the ski shop and bought them out so I could have extra layers. But yeah, so that was fun. No residuals because I'm an extra. But anyway, so there it is.
You should have joined the
SAG, Extras Guild.
Yeah.
Yeah, all those movies. Well, at that time, they didn't have a slew of movies being shot in Michigan because of the great tax breaks. So, and I was in school at the time. I decided to you know, play it safe and go to college as opposed to trying to make it in Hollywood in Michigan. Yeah. All right. Now that we're done with Cool Story, Bro, let's move on to what is...
Yes, new segment.
New
cool Story, Bro.
Cool Story. Oh, Matt's going to tell his story again. new on DVD and Blu-ray. One of the biggest surprises for me of 2012 came out on Blu-ray this week, called End of Watch. This is a film that is written and directed by, if I remember, David Ayers, who wrote Training Day, wrote Dark Blue, directed, I think he directed Street Kings, Harsh Life. That's the one with Christian Bale living in South Central L.A. And now we have End of Watch, which has Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena as police officers in South Central Los Angeles. Apparently, this guy can only write and direct stuff set in Southern L.A.
You like what you like.
And Woody Allen stayed in New York for decades. So there are two cops on the go who we see them work as partners. We see them, of course, kick down doors, which we all like to see. No Vic Mackey in this one. I know you're bummed out about that.
You know
that.
Me in the Shield.
I know. That's a good one. But but they do come across a little bit of corruption. Big shocker with this one. Some members of the police are involved with gang activity.
Oh, come on.
So,
shocking.
That
never happens. No.
Never.
Come on.
But what makes this slightly better is, you know, Ayres knows his territory. Really good collaboration between Gyllenhaal and Pena. Anna Kendrick pops up in this movie as well. So you get to see more. It's a good balance of, yes, the stuff that we expect where they're investigating stuff that could or could not be corrupted. But also you get the chemistry and the collaboration between Pena and Gyllenhaal. And they're very good. And the ending's not exactly what one expects in a non-pot boiler. So, yeah, this turned out to be, and not enough people saw this. That's the other one. I was kind of surprised at that. So definitely worth checking out.
I love it when a movie grabs me frequently. And
yes, we'll just leave it at that. Also on DVD and Blu-ray this week, one of the stranger pictures that come out that also hardly anybody saw, and it's a film called The Paperboy. Now stay with me on this. This was co-written for the screen and directed by Lee Daniels, who of course got great acclaim a couple years ago with the film Precious. Okay, here's the storyline. It's 1969 Florida. We have Zac Efron, yes, getting out from, doing movies
singing
with the two.
Singing and dancing in
high
school.
He's past that. Uh-huh. He's past that. Uh-huh. He's a former college swimming star, now stuck at home. And he winds up being a driver for his older brother, who is a reporter for a Miami newspaper, played by Matthew McConaughey. And he is in small town Florida to work on a story about a woman who has a habit. She's had a habit of writing letters to prisoners, and she is getting involved in a case trying to get this one particular gentleman who is on death row his day in court. The young woman is played by Nicole Kidman, the death row inmate played by John Cusack. Still with me?
I'm with you. I'm with you all the way. You know my love for John Cusack. Come on.
Really? You're not going to like him in this one. It's a strange picture. And a couple things. So the film, I think, played at Cannes and did poorly. And the fact that what's amazing is, you know, Lee Daniels got I believe he was nominated for Best Director for Precious and was up for a screenplay nomination. And the film was just odd enough that it didn't get picked up and it hasn't been distributed all that well. It's also famous for a scene where Zac Efron's character is stung several times by jellyfish. And, of course, to cure the sting, there's a scene with, I'll word this correctly, of Nicole Kidman urinating on Zac Efron. And somewhere Chuck Berry and R. Kelly are raking up big dollars, wishing they had produced this film.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and that's not even the most bizarre spot. There's also the first meeting between Cusack and Kidman that, I will say there's no physical contact, but there is weird stuff that happens in a prison visitation hall. And it seemed like all the shock value that happened in this film for almost exploitation film purposes. And I didn't feel that way with Precious. Now, granted, that's also not a Lee Daniels. I mean, it's not a Lee Daniels original. Neither is this one. And I've heard I have to check out the film he did before Precious called Shadow Boxer, which has a weird relationship between a hitman, Cuba Gooding Jr., and Helen Mirren, which also I think had Monique and a much not wearing clothes Stephen Dorff. I love looking.
No one should have to be put through that, Matt. No.
Well, and the only reason why I know this is because there's a documentary called This Is Not Rated, and Lee Daniels had to fight tooth and nail about not getting an NC-17 rating over Shadow Boxer, and it involved a scene with Stephen Dorff. There, you're welcome. But there's lots, and I was thinking about, there's a lot of shocking stuff that happened in Precious, but it didn't feel like an exploitation film. This one does. This one does. And it's one of those, it has to be seen to be believed.
Are we all that surprised with Zac Efron? Come on. You prop him up there, you're looking for some pretty screen time.
Yes, but you don't expect to get urinated on by an Academy Award winning actress.
Well, there's that.
You know, I don't believe this happens in Charlie St. Cloud. I'm saying.
Probably not.
Or the what was the Nicholas Sparks novel that he appeared in where he's saved
by
Charlie
the photo?
That wasn't
Charlie St. Cloud?
No, it has Spark-like tendencies.
That was on TV the other night.
Let me guess, you didn't turn it on.
No, I didn't, and nor did we watch it.
Really?
Yes.
She turned it on, and then you just said no?
Yeah, and then we went to the gym.
Did you deliberately go to the gym because of that?
No.
But she didn't want to watch it?
No.
Okay. We've just dodged a bullet that she likes more than just chick flicks. That is Fair Sweet Bianca, the correspondent in search of a title.
Undergoing reassignment.
Undergoing reassignment. Very good. So, yeah, I would say... The Paperboy is a six pack movie. I think you need a few drinks in you before you go and watch that. Also out on DVD, finally, and we go back to the Academy Awards because it's grown up movie season. But the documentary Searching for Sugar Man, which I really, really enjoyed, and I'm really, if they're smart, they will let Rodriguez perform at the Oscars. That would be phenomenal. But of course,
it was unbelievable.
I clicked the wrong thing at first.
Yes, we know. What's that woman doing on top of Frank Caliendo?
We're nothing
screaming?
But professional around here,
no,
folks.
That's right. We are your home for Soundbite Radio.
That's not terrible.
No, we have long attention spans, but we also play with sound bites. Yep. That's what we do there. But this is the story of Rodriguez, who was considered the Bob Dylan of Detroit. And he recorded a couple albums that went nowhere. But while he went nowhere in the United States, had a huge following in South Africa, especially at the beginning of the apartheid movement. And it's just a feel good story. Dare I say, a truly moving picture about a musician. The fact that music is universal, and this is not a shocking story for me because I know a number of blues and jazz musicians that are more successful and more famous in Europe and in Asia than they are here in the United States. But it is a very cool story. It is up for Best Documentary. We're checking out. That's on. I know, Tracy, that's on your list.
It is on my list.
Yes.
Most definitely. Cool soundtrack. Cool music. The two albums are now available, but there is also a soundtrack of Searching for Sugar Man. That's where
it's
out.
Also an art film.
It is. Well, it played in the art theaters. I guess it's an art film because it's a documentary. Not all documentaries are art films, right, Michael? Okay, and Morgan. So anyway, that is out there as well. So that brings me to what we alluded to earlier when you weren't here, Tracy. It's okay. But, this is the time of the year where a lot of people are catching up on films that are nominated.
I put my big girl panties on and I try to get through the list of Oscar nominations.
We got that.
Yes, we have.
Okay.
That.
So, and I know you have been doing that. And so, what have you caught up on so far? Because I know there's other people out listening that do the same thing that you do.
Well, we've discovered that I have a really bad habit of watching horrific reality TV,
such as
Lord have mercy.
No, I don't. What it was? Bravo has
Real
Lord
Housewives flipping out. I mean, it's.
There's a show called Flipping Out.
Basketball Wives. I mean, it's gotten really bad.
No, wait, I'm sorry. Is there a series called Flipping Out?
Yes.
Is it the kid from, is it Steven from Best Freak Out Ever?
No, it's about flipping houses, actually.
Oh, not having public meltdowns.
No,
I would actually watch that.
You should watch Basketball
Jim
Wives.
Jim Mora and a bunch of other, Mike Gundy would be on there. That would rule. I'm sorry, continue. I'm not making your point.
So trying to be a better human being, I've decided that I really enjoy peering into the lives of others, whether
just
it's
not named
fake
Honey Boo Boo.
Exactly.
Right.
I don't go to that level yet, but I'm tempted.
By the fruit of another.
So we decided that this year we would start our Oscar pursuit with the documentaries.
Which I have to say, Searching for Sugar Man is the only one of the lot that I've seen. They were not. Hopefully they will get to Indianapolis soon if they haven't already.
They have not been readily available, but care of our friends at Netflix, I've been able to catch up on a few films.
I've never heard of that company, but
I don't know either. Invisible War was the first one that we tackled.
And that is about?
Rape in the military. A a fairly serious topic.
Not fairly, a serious topic.
Yeah, it was rough to watch. It was rough to get through, but definitely worth watching. Worth looking into the different aspects of.
Now that being said, sorry to cut you off.
No, feel free.
And this is a little piece of advice that we're giving to the engaged one here. That's you, Kobe, uh-huh. and Fair Sweet Beyond, and for anybody else, whether you are married or not, or in a relationship. You don't want to end the evening on a documentary like that.
Yeah, this was our Saturday night after dinner
that
together.
That was your quote-unquote date film?
That was our date film.
Wow.
Yeah.
Please tell me you did not go straight to bed after that. That's like the Bataan Death March.
We did. It was a.
It
was a quiet. It was a quiet march up the stairs and a quiet turnover in the bed.
Okay. And you and Mr. Mitchell have been married how long?
Oh, Lord, now 7 years.
Okay. Kobe, don't do that.
Don't ever do that.
Family Guy, put in some cooking show, something to cleanse your mental palate before you don't want to go to bed after seeing a film like that.
It's duly noted. It leaves things in your brain and your dreams that you just don't want. So, but a fabulous film, absolutely worth checking out.
It's all in the timing. I guess what we're saying. You know, Holocaust films, same thing. Don't end the evening on that. So you've seen that.
We've seen that. Now we also watched. That same weekend, a film that's not actually nominated, but I feel like should be and should have been.
Oh, so now we're getting into what if I had a ballot.
If I had a ballot. Right.
They don't know anything because they never made a movie.
Yes, we also like to make sports callers sound like film show callers.
Yeah, you wouldn't know anything about that though because you never played.
But The Queen of Versailles, which if people aren't familiar with, is about this couple.
It doesn't sound like a Victorian era movie that Kobe would be forced upon. Yeah. But go on.
Yes, Mr. Mitchell tried to put it on. I'm like, what are we about to watch? But it was actually really fabulous. It's about a couple. He owns timeshares and has made quite a living for himself, actually from Indianapolis. And his wife, he and his wife are building the
artificial looking wife. You're supposed to like the biggest house in the world.
Biggest house in America, the largest single family home, three stories. It's crazy. Well, then, of course, what happened? The economy tanked. And we go from watching them, you know, rolling around in their Rolls Royce and
gold plated Rolls Royce and
$5 million worth of marble that she's got sitting in her garage at this house.
She actually has marbles that she plays. She plays a game of marbles with 800 people. I'm sorry.
And then the tragic, you know, ending as he, you know, you watch his business collapse and she continues to act like a hoarder and pick up three packages of Operation at Walmart and
the board game.
The board game.
What? Why? Do we need three copies?
Because people are hoarders. And
I don't
they
think
do
I've ever
things.
Owned three.
So what is it about then? It's about is it like
the
pretty much
shift
just,
of the lifestyle?
Shift of, the shift of wealth. I mean, you watch this man go from just loving his kids and they have everything and they're in private schools to him yelling at them because the door's open and they left a light on and how dare they?
So that they get to become regular people.
Yeah, your average, you know, family still living in a 10,000-square-foot home.
So he lives on 161st Street is what you're saying. So, but I've seen the trailers for this, and I've seen some clips. And it does, I have to say, it does have a Bravo-like feel to it.
It might have to do with the top half of this woman's body.
Not just her, It's not just that, but I think just the tone of it, the shift of it.
You know, it definitely has aspects of that. It was definitely something to move me into
the Real
watching.
Housewives of Broke Dudes.
Yes, exactly. But it has that aspect to it. But it's really interesting to watch a man who's built this business really just lose himself in wealth.
Do you feel sorry for him?
In a way, you
but,
feel.
But is he a raging tool at the beginning?
You know, he's not. But it's funny because he talks all about that. He in this film, he also references they live in Florida, and how you know he basically got George Bush elected, and he didn't want to talk about it on camera because he probably did some things that were
no
illegal,
Chad oriented.
So, but. You know, it's just interesting to watch somebody who has built themselves from nothing into something that's successful, the American dream.
And he's originally from Indy.
He's originally from Indy.
I see.
So it was worth checking out. It's on Netflix. It's available.
Okay.
Worth an hour and a half of your time.
Nothing to something, back to nothing.
And I have not had a chance to do some web-based research and find out where they exist now.
What'd you say, Cobb?
You go from nothing to something to back to nothing.
Like the show. Okay. So we're still catching up on things.
We're still catching up on things like that. But I did, with the with Argo being nominated.
You enjoyed that.
They brought it back out into theaters just briefly. We were discussing whether or not that was going to happen. We were excited to see that happen.
It did have a run at the IMAX theater, and The Master is happening now. 70mm print of The Master at IMAX.
I will have to check that one out.
And say hi to Amy Adams for us.
Oh, you know I love her.
Not as much as we do, we think. Okay, very cool. So now there's some old titles, just a handful of old titles that are out on DVD. And then I do want to get to Into the Archives and Dead People We Like, because we should. Olive Video has put out The Quiet Man.
Oh.
You've seen The Quiet Man?
No, but I've... that's
you really
familiar.
Should. This well, John Wayne, John Ford, the lovely Maureen O'Hara. This is always the one John Wayne film that people who hate John Wayne will actually watch.
Okay.
And I don't know why they're putting it out.
Maybe you
now.
Gave me this.
I probably did.
I think you might have.
Did you watch it?
Yeah.
Good.
I can't remember it.
Well, I've given you so many.
Yeah.
So, but this is and it's a gorgeous film. John Ford won Best Picture or Best Director, I should say. Sorry, he won 4 Oscars, none of them for Westerns. I don't know why it's coming out now as opposed to March when it's St. Patrick's Day, but that's okay. It's not. I'm not Olive Studios. Sorry.
Yes, this is the... Yes.
Yes,
yeah,
St.
Yep,
Patrick's Day.
Yep, yep.
Yes, shot in Ireland.
Yep,
there's some gorgeous footage of Ireland, and then there's some extremely obviously made-in-studio shots, but that's what they did back then because it was the 1950s and the 1950s code.
Different time.
We also have Pina, story of Pina Bausch, the famous choreographer. 7% Solution. This is Sherlock Holmes working with Sigmund Freud, with Nicole Williamson and Alan Arkin and Robert Duvall. And Deadly Blessing, which was, I think it's the, I don't think he's Amish, but it's the fanatical small town thriller with Ernest Borgnine. And a film I remember seeing in theaters and made me kind of nervous in the early 80s, Cujo. It's one Stephen King novel with Dee Wallace, and she and her kid are stuck in the car with the deadly dog. She's just ramming the head into the car.
It made me never want to have an animal ever
really?
In my life. As a child, yes. It scared,
wow.
scared the bejesus out of me.
Okay, that's not good, so we can't have that happen.
We'll move on.
We will move on. All right, we're going to go into the archives for a little bit. Now, what happens, of course, ladies and gentlemen, is there are some studios, like Warner Brothers, like Sony, like MGM, like Paramount, where they now have movies that you can order from their online website. You cannot get these in stores. Or it almost feels like somebody's burning a disc, or as they would like to say...
Yeah, I'll burn it for like $5.
Only in Warner Brothers' case, it's more like 15 to 20. But we have not one, but two films directed by Ken Russell, one of my favorite lunatic directors from England. Of course, this is the man that have I made you watch Ken Russell?
Yeah, I watched Blue Velvet.
That's not Ken Russell.
I thought it was.
No, that's David Lynch.
I think you made... Tommy's Ken Russell.
Yes, Tommy is Ken Russell.
Yeah.
That's probably who's best known for. Tommy, Listomania, Women in Love, The Devils, and so on and so forth. Well, there were two of his films that I've not gotten to from the archive pile. And first is 1972's Savage Messiah. Now he... In the early 70s, besides doing Women in Love, the D.H. Lawrence novel, but he also did biopics on artists like Mahler. He did one called Mahler. He also did one with Tchaikovsky called The Music Lovers. And this is the one, and I'm going to butcher this, so I'm sorry. Pardon my French literary, but it's about the French sculptor Henri Gaudier-Brzeka, who had a very long platonic relationship with a Polish writer, 20 years his junior, played by Dorothy Tootin. Scott Anthony plays the artist. And if you're looking for wall-to-wall crazy spectacle like in Tommy and Listomania, not quite. It's interesting. If you get a chance to see a film like Women in Love, you get to see moments where it gets odd. Women in Love is probably most famous for a nude wrestling scene between Alan Bates and Oliver Reed. Tracy just perked up on that one. She's going to look up both of those guys. This is 1970 Oliver Reed and Alan Bates, not near dead and Gladiator Oliver Reed. Nobody wants that. But it's an interesting relationship between the two artists in pre-World War One Paris. Now, the other thing that this film, Savage Messiah, is known for, it is one of the early films of Helen Mirren.
Mm.
And I will word this properly, and it's kind of an insight. If you've seen Helen Mirren in Excalibur, you get a lot more of that in Savage Messiah. And I'm just going to leave it at...
He's just going to shuffle his paper to the side, folks.
Off to the side. And I can tell you, gents and certain ladies, well worth it. Okay, we now move to the other Ken Russell film from 1977 called Valentino. It was a biopic of the silent film star Rudolph Valentino, which was also the acting debut of ballet dancer Rudolph Nureyev, who played Valentino. And it's Russell's take on the biopic, or as Laura Jansen always says, I hate biopics because they're movies about people. But, and she's talking about the biopic format. But this is about Valentino and some of the women in his life. And in the film, the women in his life are Leslie Caron, for you fans of Gigi, Michelle Phillips, for you fans of Mamas and the Papas, Carol Kane, for you fans of Taxi and Scrooge, Seymour Cassell, not one of the women in his life, but it is him trying to break into movies, his rise, his fall. There was always a recurring undercurrent of people, men mostly, questioning his masculinity because he did silent movies and he knew ballet. Well, I don't know if Valentino knew ballet, but he knew a lot of dance. So that is all addressed. It's also famous for a strategically placed nude poster of Rudolph Nureyev and Michelle Phillips in deep embrace. So,
and people can access this video via...
You can order it through MGM Archives.
There you go.
They'll burn it for you.
They'll burn it for you.
For about $20.
$5.
Yeah. No, it's not $5, I assure you. So anyway, that is also out there. Kobe, do we have the Chris Lloyd's famous...
Yep.
Doing there. Our the annual show of dead people we like.
there's a pretty big one this
we
week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
We never do. And I apologize for not getting to this one last week, but it's Italian actress Mariangela Mulatto, who died at the age of 71, and is best known for working with director Lena Wertmuller. And did two films of note that people would know. She was in The Seduction of Mimi, and she was in the original Swept Away. Now, for a lot of American audiences, this film was horrendously remade by Guy Ritchie and Madonna.
Oh, God.
See? yes. Some of her other films include Love and Anarchy. The two American films, I forgot, she was in So Fine, which was a weird comedy with Ryan O'Neal from the early 80s, but she was also the lover of Emperor Ming in Flash Gordon from 1980. So,
wow.
Yeah, so you have to go check
Rest
that out.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. And director Michael Winner, English director from London, who died at the age of 77. And looking at his, and as one of those, now he started doing movies in the late 50s and finished doing movies in the late 90s. So I saw a lot of his films growing up because it was the 70s, and that was, Kobe,
different time.
Different time.
Slower time.
Shut up.
As you would say, it was the best time.
For filmmakers, I would say yes. I tend to not compile lists and have the worst or best fill-in-the-blank ever.
You're not going to make Bleacher Report lists?
I'm not going to make Bleacher Report. I'm not Jack Black in High Fidelity. It's amazing what a wife and a child want. Someday when you have a child,
you'll understand.
So, but he worked with Oliver Reed on several films. Films like The Jokers, I'll Never Forget What's His Name, Hannibal Brooks. Then came to Hollywood and did a really pretty decent 1970 Western called Lawman with Burt Lancaster. But he's probably best known for working several times with Charles Bronson. Started with Shadow's Land, did the original Mechanic, not the Jason Statham remake, The Stone Killer, and then as every report put out, he was the director of the first three Death Wish films with Bronson. He also wound up doing films like The One Ton Ton, The Dog That Saved Hollywood, The Sentinel, The Big Sleep with Robert Mitchum, Firepower, The Wicked Lady, Appointment with Death, and Bullseye. Now, I watched Lawman and I watched the first Death Wish this past week, not just out of respect and tribute, but also as research. And Death Wish is one of those films, the first one, that kind of like First Blood, kind of like Rocky, although not even close to Rocky. but it is a good enough film that you forget how decent it is because there were so many bad sequels made. So I'm to this day, I know some people find the idea of Charles Bronson playing a liberal architect a little hard to swallow, but it is for me like Straw Dogs, a film about and even to a certain degree a history of violence, the Viggo Mortensen film, a film about an ordinary person being pushed to do extraordinary feats of violence, and I think Bronson does that well. The other thing, Kobe, really cool soundtrack by Herbie Hancock.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and then of course Death Wish 2 and 3. Three recycles the soundtrack from 2 with Jimmy Page. Different. I like it. Yeah. So, but yeah, of course, then he started making the sequels, and it just kind of...
It's all downhill.
It kind of went all downhill from there. And, of course, the film in the 70s, it repulsed a lot of the critics. A lot of people thought it was a public service announcement for vigilantism. That's a word. And I don't think it does. Maybe in the last 10 minutes. But you do see him battling with... Is he doing this for the revenge of his wife who is murdered and his daughter who is raped, and when does it become this is all he can do? So I will say that. But Death Wish 2, oh, also one of the killers in Death Wish that takes care, Jeff Goldblum.
That man is frightening.
Young Jeff Goldblum, just like one of the young killers in Death Wish.
Jeff Goldblum is frightening.
A little bit.
A little freaky looking.
It's a heebie-jeebie moment for
really?
Me.
Really, you yeah. enjoyed The Fly. No. and then you also, one of the killers in Death Wish 2, young Lawrence Fishburne, and one of the killers in Death Wish 3. Death Wish 3 is known for being over-the-top crazy. Was supposed to be set in New York, filmed in London. Martin Balsam's in this picture. Alex Winter, for you Bill and Ted fans, is one of the killers. But it's just over-the-top. I mean, the ridiculous. They almost look like the gangs look like they're in a bad Road Warrior knockoff film. You know, treating New York as it's you know, 2030 wasteland, even though it's New York, but it's shot in London. It's just becoming, and there's a really nice write-up on it in The Onion of the cult canon, the new cult canon. So, you know, first one, pretty decent. 2 and 3, they're entertaining, but not for the right reasons. So there is that. Now, Lawman is a 1970 Western starring Burt Lancaster. You also have Lee J. Cobb and Robert Ryan. And kind of standard late 70s, this, you know, studios were still putting out a number of Westerns, and they were still trying to do something, anything, to compete with the Sergio Leone Westerns of the late 60s. Lee J. Cobb is the town boss and, you know, kind of guy who has an incredible amount of pull in his small town. He's got 4 Hellraisers that wind up accidentally killing a person after a night of drinking and shooting, and Marshal Burt Lancaster is going to come to town and go and get them. Robert Ryan is the sheriff who's the sheriff only in badge and doesn't have much pull anyway. Some of the guys, some of the baddies that Lancaster goes after includes J.D. Cannon, Ralph Waite, Robert Duvall. Sherry North is a woman from his past. Google image her, Kobe.
Sherry North?
Sherry North. S-H-E-R-E-E North. You will probably say she's 70s pretty. Because that's what you do. It gets really dark in the last 10 minutes of the film. Prior to that, it's kind of standard good guy, bad guy Western. Although I like watching films with Burt Lancaster and Lee J. Cobb and Robert Ryan. The trailer's fascinating. The trailer, you have the kind of pseudo Ennio Morricone, you know, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly music, and you have slow motion shots and almost this kind of psychedelic lighting, and it's trying to make it look like a kind of new spin on an old genre, and it's kind of not, except for the last 10 minutes. Kobe, you approve of Sherry North?
A 1970s beauty.
Yeah, she's not just 70s pretty. She's
Ooh,
pretty pretty.
All right, so you have to start looking up films with Sherry North. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Words to live by.
Silent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Tracy Mitchell, thank you for hanging out.
Hey, always a pleasure on a Friday afternoon to spend it with you.
And remember, don't go to bed on a really, really bummer movie Cleanse your palate.
Cleanse your palate.
There you go. Thanks, Cobe. All right, go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
We go.
Go, Red Wings.
Myers.